The war in Ukraine is raging on, and so is the debate about possible sanctions against Russia. The world of sports is no different. A few days after the invasion of Ukraine, the IOC recommended that Russian and Belarusian athletes should not be invited to international competitions. A lot of federations followed through with this recommendation, some faster, some slower. The Luge Federation was one of the quickest to ban the athletes, a decision that was lifted last week after the internal arbitration court ruled that the Russian must not be excluded, because such a move would be a violation against the political neutrality of the federation. A political neutrality that is enshrined in a lot of statutes of sports federations and in the Olympic Charter. So there seems to be a problem. The IOC recommended something that the federations cannot implement, at least not without violating their own statutes. A problem that arises because the IOC and the federations have dodged the discussion about their relationship to political actors, says the German sports lawyer Christoph Wieschemann. Although there were many occasions which should have warranted that debate, not the least the annexation of the Crimean Peninsula by Russia in 2014. Mr. Pound, every time the IOC and the federations were criticized for turning a blind eye to human rights violations and went ahead with Olympics and World Cups in countries like China and Russia, the response was always, we, the IOC, are not political. Has now the time come to abolish this notion and to admit that sometimes even the IOC has to act politically?
Well, it's certainly a real conundrum for all sport organizations. And I think perhaps we've become too comfortable with there being no wars of any size, since the end of the Second World War. And all of our rules are designed to, on the assumption that we're dealing with reasonable people who themselves are following the rules. When you have a case of war, that's a different issue. And the question then becomes, well, is there a difference between a country that is making deliberate war against another country? Do the rules still stand? You're invading a country, and then you say, but you can't keep us out of the sports because you're politically neutral, even though we're not acting politically neutrally. So I appreciate the problem. And
do you have a solution?
Well, certainly a solution would be to amend the rules, even retrospectively if necessary, to say, look, the assumption is that we were dealing with people who are acting peacefully. If one of our member countries is not acting in that fashion, perhaps there's we either need a new rule, or we simply say, wait, in the case of an unjustified attack on another country, you're not entitled.
So you support the Luge Federation, for example, who is now in considerations how to amend their statutes to exclude the Russians in 2 months at the next Congress. So you support that the statutes are amended to account for this kind of situation?
I understand why they would do that. I mean, I would have thought, frankly, that I would say, if I were in the position of the Luge Federation, I'd say, I'm sorry, we are not sending you an invitation, period. And if you want to sue me, but you're not going to get an invitation. And if you don't get an invitation, you can't participate. And there are other ways of doing this. I mean, the sport federations can speak to their government and say, it would be very helpful in this circumstance for you to prohibit Russian and Belarusian athletes from entering the country.
But that would also mean that the government again would interfere with sporting competitions, something that the IOC has taken problem with in the past.
Well, no, because they would be acting on the basis of a request from the federation. That's a different dynamic than simply a unilateral action on the part of governments. And we've had other cases recently where the National Olympic Committees have gone to their governments and asked for legislative or administrative assistance. And that's a different thing than an unprovoked action by the government without any consultation or request.
So you just said that if a federation just continues with that and says, Russians, you are not invited, and they should just say, sue me if you have a problem with that. Well, the Russians have sued or have went to the CAS to deliberate these decisions, for example, the UEFA decision. So what happens if the CAS rules, well, the federations are not allowed to exclude Russians? What should the federations do? Should they just ignore the ruling by the CAS?
That's one possibility. The other possibility is that faced with actual war in progress, the CAS would rule with that context in mind.
So you do think that the CAS will rule against the Russians in these cases?
I think there's a, I speak as a lawyer. I would be very happy to argue that case in front of CAS, saying this is not.
How would you shape your argument if you'd be in a position of the federation? How would you shape your argument in front of the CAS?
I would say we have rules. And we are not acting in accordance with those rules by excluding a member federation or whatever the particular organization is. But that rule was prepared and drafted and enacted on the basis that everybody would be behaving in a non-warlike manner. Here we have an invasion of another country, and that's different. The sports organizations in that country, which is at war, are part of that country, and they have to accept the decision that would be to the effect, look, I'm sorry, but whether there may not be any losers in the Russian troops, but you are responsible for what your country is doing.
So you support that the athletes are excluded. So a report by the think tank Play the Game showed that only 7 out of 40 federations have banned Russian officials. Also, the IOC has recommended to ban athletes, but it has not recommended to ban Russian officials from the federations. Why are the punishments for athletes harder than for officials right now?
Here, I don't have the benefit of having been part of or hearing the discussion. So I don't know why there is a difference between athletes and officials. It seems counterintuitive that the punishment or the management would be selective on that basis. So I don't know the answer to that question, but it's certainly a good question.
So the IOC executive board has the option, for example, suspend IOC members until the next IOC session, could vote on the exclusion. Right now, the IOC has 2 current members and 2 honorary members from Russia. Should those be suspended and then excluded, in your opinion?
Well, that's, again, I don't know what led to the particular decision. So it's very hard to give you a sensible answer.
But right now I'm asking for your opinion. Should, if you'd be in the executive board of the IOC, would you argue for the suspension of those Russian IOC members? For example, Yelena Isinbayeva, which is probably the most famous, and she also supported Vladimir Putin in his election campaigns. She was selected by him to be one of the 75 people to rewrite the Russian constitution in 2020. She went to a Syrian airbase, or Russian airbase in Syria, I should say, in support of the troops. So should she still be a member of the IOC, in your opinion?
Again, you have the advantage of me. I wasn't there, so I really don't know what was discussed. or whether it was simply that IOC members have a special status in their country. I mean, in a sense, you know, our philosophy is that in my case, I am not a Canadian representative on the IOC. I'm a representative of the IOC in Canada. And it's a difficult philosophy sometimes to explain, but that may be part of it. And I don't know whether there would be a voluntary self-exclusion with respect to the active members. The honorary members, as you know, they neither speak nor vote during the meeting. So when you have an honorary membership, that's really all it is. You're welcome to come and listen, but we don't want to hear what you have to say.
But Mrs. Isanbayeva is not an honorary member.
She can
vote. Yeah, she can vote, and she had to swear an oath when she took the position, and she had to swear, "I will respect the Olympic Charter," and the Olympic Charter says the goal of Olympism is to place sport at the service of harmonious development of humankind with the view of promoting a peaceful society concerned with the preservation of human dignity. So how does that go together with supporting the Russian president?
Well, I think that's something she's going to have to wrestle with, because it clearly is an awkward position to be in if you've given that oath. And I think that probably this will evolve as an IOC position as the longer this conflict goes on and the more serious it is, the more the IOC is going to have to say, do we have an aspirational goal of peace, and everything we do is directed at that. How are we going to deal with deliberate conduct on the part of a country from which in which our members are representing the IOC in those circumstances? And I think that I'm trying to think when the last executive board meeting was, but it was maybe very shortly after the conflict started. And so I'm sure it will evolve. And my guess is that the executive board and the administration are wrestling with that as we speak.
Are other IOC members like you in the loop about this discussion? So if the executive board is thinking about exclusion, so is there any kind of internal deliberation about that? Or is this a decision which is taken by the members of the executive board by themselves without consulting the other IOC members like you?
I assume that if they were going to make a change of that nature, there would be something prepared by the administration and the executive board. But the IOC executive board is the government of the IOC. The individual members can vote on things if the question comes up. But the framework and the policy would be established by the executive board. My guess would be that if the executive board reaches that kind of a conclusion, they would want it to be ratified by the membership at large.
And one last try, would you be in favor of the exclusion of, for example, Mrs. Isinbayeva from the IOC?
I've always learned, don't speak until you've heard both sides of the story. And I haven't heard the other side. So there, you know, the executive board doesn't do things impetuously. I remember one of Thomas Bach's predecessors, Juan Antonio Samaranch, she said, the only time we really make bad mistakes is when we act too quickly. So it's frustrating to have this conflict, this war going on and not being able to do anything about it. But I think because it's so important and because it will have ramifications that will last after the conflict ceases, it's important to get it right. And I think that's the process that we, as an IOC member, I would be comfortable knowing that the executive board would be looking very carefully at all sides of this issue, weighing the consequences of no action, some action, drastic action. It's there's a range or a menu of possible action. So I'm confident that it will be well thought out and eventually explained to the membership at large.
IOC President Thomas Bach has met with Vladimir Putin frequently in the past years. 2018, he and FIFA President Gianni Infantino also, for example, enjoyed watching a World Cup game in Moscow. Was that kind of companionship or showing to people that the head of the most important sports federations having a good time with Mr. Putin at that time, was that a mistake?
Well, a lot of these things are symbolic gestures, as you know. I mean, there's no Infantino and Thomas don't have any divisions or tanks or anything like that. So it's important to have the best possible relationships with government officials, because a lot in many countries, almost all countries, the governments are very important. In the sense of building sports facilities and so forth. So that would be symbolic. And at that time, Russia was not at war.
Well, the Ukrainian people would probably say they were at war, because from 2014, Russian forces were in the Ukrainian, in Crimea, and also in the east of Ukraine. And there was a war ongoing, and the war was ongoing when Mr. Bach and Mr. Infantino had a nice football evening with Vladimir Putin in Moscow.
Well, I don't know enough about that, but I mean, clearly there were conflicts in parts of the Ukraine. It was a question as to whether or not they were aggressive intervention by a foreign power, or perhaps people in that part of the country were sympathetic to the Russians and were hoping to change the order in some way. But it's not like indiscriminate missiles and killings that occur in war. So it's I don't know enough about the situation, but.
This is an interesting point. So where do you draw the line, or where should the IOC and the sport federations draw a line? So you just said the annexation of Crimea apparently was not a line, not a red line for the IOC and other sport federations like FIFA, because the World Cup 2018 went ahead anyway. But now this war is, in your opinion, a red line. So where is the red line?
In wars, it's very hard to find the line quite often, but I mean, it's pretty clear to the world at large that this is a war, an invasion of another country by massive troops and heavily armed and indiscriminate shooting and bombings and so forth. That has crossed the line, and now we have to wrestle with it. And we're as sport organizations, we're singularly at a disadvantage, because we don't have some of the standard responses that can be invoked when this sort of thing happens. So one of the issues clearly is, as the losers are facing, is the best thing to do to go back, redraft our statutes to deal with situations of this nature and impose them retroactively. Is that the best way of doing things? And I think opinion will be divided on that. We'll have to see how various sports organizations deal with it.
Is this the moment for leaders of sport federations and the president of the IOC made Thomas Bach or the next one who will come after him to reassess what kind of symbolic gestures they are offering to dictators, to authoritarian leaders. Is this a point where the sports federations have also to reflect on what they did in the past and maybe say, all right, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe we need to get a little bit more distance to dictators, even though we might need them in the years to come.
Well, as I say, I think one of our problems is that since the middle 1940s, which is almost 80 years, we haven't had conduct of this nature. There've been local issues and some violence, but we haven't had a war, and so we're out of practice in dealing with it. But I mean, as you'll recall, after both of the world wars, there were exclusion of the, as it turned out, the losers, the aggressors in that situation, for a period of time, and even though the athletes in those countries were not themselves responsible for this, and we had, you know, if you're a historic perspective, we had the exclusion of South Africa because of apartheid, even longer ago than that, or actually not as long ago as that. This was between 1960 and 1992. South Africa was kept out of the games either on an ad hoc basis for 64 and 68, or institutionally from 1970 onwards.
Since then, this hasn't happened. So, does the IOC and do the sport federations have to act tougher on dictators?
Well, I'm troubled by the, one man's dictator may be another man's hero, and so you've got to be careful about that. But political leadership generally tends to have a short memory, and it's important that the consequences of behavior of that nature may affect the nationals of those countries.